Remaker's Mark Episode 11, Back to the Future. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Remaker's Mark. Today in Episode 11, we are discussing the 1985 time travel comedy classic, Back to the Future. With me, as always, are my friend Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing, and what was your first guitar?
I am well, thank you. And my first electric guitar, I'll specify, was a Samick. I think that's how you pronounce it. Samick? Samick?
Oh, sure. I remember
them. From Schmidt Music in Burnsville Center in Burnsville, Minnesota. Purchase price, I believe, $89.99. It was a white and black Strat knockoff. Really, it was more of a Squire knockoff, let's be honest. And I was super excited because it had a whammy bar.
Nice.
Yeah, and that was actually played in some gigs.
Wow, well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, indeed. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you tonight, and what was your first guitar?
I'm fantastic, and my first guitar was an acoustic guitar, and I purchased it from a tiny little hole-in-the-wall guitar shop because I needed one, and it was an Oscar Schmidt, and I believe I paid $2.99 for it.
Ooh, nice. Wow.
With high roller.
Was there a dot in there somewhere? 2.99?
No.
It's a comma. He's European.
But then when I bought my second guitar, I realized just how high off of the fretboard the strings actually were and how terrible it was.
You had the strongest fret hand in the world.
Exactly.
I had a forearm of solid rock. I look like Popeye.
Nice. Lee Hamaker-Schlemmer, how are you tonight? And what was your first guitar?
I'm great. And it was a Harmony. It was an electric guitar.
Sweet.
It was called Harmony from Sears, I believe. But I didn't buy it from Sears. I traded my Nintendo to a friend of mine who had it because I wasn't playing Nintendo anymore. And
you moved on to Sega?
Yeah, exactly. And I learned a lot of songs on it. And I believe I still have it.
Harmonies are pretty well loved. Like Jack White plays harmonies. Yeah. Annie Clark from St. Vincent plays a harmony every now and again. There's some love for the Sears guitars.
Yeah, I would love to have a guitar like that.
Yeah, the neck is nice, but the rest of it is garbage. But
nice.
Yep, that was it.
Nice. And that that voice that you heard there, which you haven't heard for some time here, is that of Mark Josting, who is triumphantly back.
Yay!
From paternity leave, we'll call it. So, Mark, congratulations. We hope you and your family are doing very well. Exactly how little sleep have you gotten over the past several months?
I've gotten actually a lot of sleep.
Yeah? Right. Right on. Good.
Father of the year.
It's mostly because I ignore my family.
Okay.
No, it's
understandable.
Little Iris is a great sleeper, so I am also I'm a grateful sleeper.
Wonderful. Well put. Well, we miss you like crazy, and we're happy that you're back. So,
Thank you. It's
congratulations
good to be back.
On your beautiful, happy family, and we're very happy to have you here. So, what was your first guitar? Now that we've talked about your first baby.
My first electric guitar was an Ibanez S series.
Ooh.
And
wow.
That's a lot of guitar for a teenager.
Yeah.
But I was also happy for the whammy bar on it. And if had I a lesser guitar, I think I might have broken it because I practically did push-ups on that whammy bar.
Here, son, nice. Have the keys to the Jaguar.
That's a lot of guitar for an adult.
Yeah, it's a lot of guitar for anybody. I don't quite know what to do when I'm handed an Ibanez. I just feel funny. Wonderful. So my name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host here tonight. And my first guitar, I honestly don't know what brand it was. It was bought at a pawn shop in Brainerd along with a PV. I think it was a Stage. No, that was the Fender. It was a PV Backstage Plus amplifier for probably a grand total of $75 between the two. Yeah, it's just this tiny little PV.
Did it come in a big cardboard box?
No, it wasn't a combination. It was its own crappy guitar and crappy amp sold separately. So it treated me well. And then after that, I got a Squire Strat that matches the exact description of your Samick, Andy.
Nice.
So, yep, indeed.
You had what my guitar aspired to be.
Gently aspired. Yeah, it's actually pretty good. It's not a bad guitar for a $200 guitar. I still have it, and with a little work, it did pretty well. So the tie-in there is that, again, we're talking about Back to the Future today, which features the classic Chuck, This Is Your Cousin Marv scene with him playing the Chuck Berry tune. So we thought that was a nice little guitar tie-in here, and since we're all good music nerds and have played music together in some way, shape, or form together in the past, we thought that would be fun.
I want to take a quick moment to thank our friends at Tipsy Pixels for their promotional consideration.
Tipsy Pixels is a monthly retro video game contest hosted by Nell's Lens of Huge Theater that features drink specials from Tallgrass Brewing. Players can win prizes from Level Up Games, as well as free drinks and tickets to shows. Upcoming events are August 16th at Amsterdam Bar in St. Paul, playing Super Street Fighter 2. To find out more about Tipsy Pixels, head to tipsypixels.com or follow them on Twitter at tipsypixels.
Again, we're talking about Back to the Future today. So, Andy, do you want to tell a little bit about Back to the Future and our history with that?
Certainly. Back to the Future is a 1985 American science fiction film directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, Crispin Glover, and Thomas F. Wilson. The film tells the story of a one Marty McFly, a teenager who is accidentally sent back in time from 1985 to 1955. He meets his future parents in high school and accidentally attracts his future mother's romantic interest. Marty must repair the damage to history by causing his parents-to-be to fall in love. And with the help of scientist Dr. Emmett Doc Brown, he must find a way to return to 1985. I think I saw this movie in a drive-in, but I really have no historical basis for that memory. So there you go.
let's just say that you were also in a DeLorean at that drive-in.
I think I was in a DeLorean.
There
you go. And I think I saw it in 1955 in a drive-in. Lee, did you have some experience with this movie?
I did. This is one of the few movies from my childhood that I was really, really anticipating it coming out. And I believe I did see it opening weekend. Return of the Jedi was about the only other one that I was really looking forward to seeing as much as this one. And when I walked out of the theater that night, I was like, wow, I like that movie more than Return of the Jedi. So,
wow. No small feat, especially since we have been told that is your favorite Star Wars movie.
Yeah. So, but well, in hindsight, I went back on that. I like Return of the Jedi more, but it's still Back to the Future is still a really good movie.
Indeed.
Which I'll use as a little foreshadowing because I noticed a lot of commonality, shall we say, between the Star Wars universe and the Back to the Future universe. But
yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Perhaps.
Let me put it this way. I could hear it.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. A little Ben Burtt in there somewhere.
So I actually looked on the credits and I saw no connection between the two worlds in the sound department. So I'm not sure if it was just a blatant ripoff or an homage or what, but we'll get to that.
Maybe it's all the Wilhelm screams and
kind of, yeah, it might be.
They're both working with the same Moog synthesizers to create the noise.
The sound library in the late 80s or the early 80s was much smaller than it is now.
Yeah, maybe it's just indeed. Somebody on the Back to the Future set that just kept panting loudly.
Jared, tell us about your experience with the movie.
Well, when I was growing up, I lived out in the country, and so we didn't go to movies very much. And if there was an experience with the movie, it was renting it from the cafe, which is where you rented movies from. And so I didn't have anticipation about any movies, and so the movies I did see, like Three Amigos, Back to the Future, all of these bizarre little 80s comedies. They were all at my friend Ryan's house when I slept over. So more than likely, I saw this at a sleepover. And we played with He-Man.
As nice. You do.
Yep. And Transformers.
As one does in 1985.
As one does as a boy in 1985. It's okay to gender type because those still existed then. All right, so that is the history with Back to the Future. So now we're going to jump into the first part of our discussion of Back to the Future. And as you know, if you are a frequent Remakers Mark listener, or if you're not, we're going to tell you anyway, so don't feel bad about it, although maybe just a little. The first episode of Remakers Mark of each movie talks about recasting. So what choices would we make in terms of recasting the remake of our movie? So we've got five major characters that we are recasting and three minor characters that we are recasting. So the first major character that we are recasting is that of Biff Tannen. Andy, tell us about Biff.
Certainly. Biff Tannen is the meathead's meathead. Biff gets his way through diplomacy and tact, which are what he calls his right and left fists. That's not true. You probably can't even pronounce them. He also rocks a mid-1980s comb over in the beginning and end of the movie. He's originally played by Thomas Wilson. He was a hard one for me to cast, I think partly because we've talked about this a little bit before with some other movies that we've cast, that I don't feel like I know a lot of actors that would be able to play kind of this high school to, early 20-something kind of age range and play it well. Excuse me. So I just said, hey, you know what? I'm going to pick a guy that if I saw him in a buzz cut and 1955 rolled up t-shirt with a pack of cigarettes in his sleeve or something like that.
A greaser.
Thank you. I picked Channing Tatum because
nice.
Dude would scare me in an outfit like that. And he seems like he would be able to have a lot of fun playing a guy that says things like, make like a tree and get out of here.
Yeah, I'd love to see him get a little bit like self-aware about his
totally. And it's it would fool absolutely no one. And I think it would be just a very much a kind of a wink and a nod to the audience. Like, yeah, he's, you know, 30 something, but whatever, he's Biff right now. So there you go. Channing Tatum is
I like it. Plus we could try to orchestrate a dance scene for him, which would be exceptional.
I don't think that would be too difficult in a remake. Mark, to you.
Thank you. I had similar difficulties with casting this one, that there are basically like three distinct Biffs in this film, and it's tough to find a person that can get all of them. So basically I went with a similar approach, like who looks like a good 1955? And I came up with Sebastian Stan. And you may know him from Captain America, probably, where he plays Bucky, the sidekick.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, he's a big and can be intimidating guy. And I think he would look great in the 1950s outfit. But I think he can soften up the look enough where he could play a good spineless too. So that's my pick for Biff, Sebastian Stan.
Nice. I like that. I liked him in Captain America. And I think he's going to fare pretty significantly in the next Captain America, which is the Winter Soldier timeline or storyline. So
indeed, he should be a lead in that one.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, I don't know anything else about him, but that's a good call. I like that.
Thanks. Yeah, I think he's got a couple things on his resume, but I don't think he's done anything as significant as his role as Bucky. I'm willing to give him one though. So Kyle, up to you, please.
Yeah. So I wanted I really felt that Thomas Wilson was pretty menacing in the first one. Like he was good in several ways, in that he was a total dick. he was menacing, or a total dick as an adult. He was menacing as a high schooler, and then, you know, he played sort of subservient at the end just fine. So, like, I actually thought that performance was pretty good. I mean, there's not several notes to that performance in spite of all those things that I just mentioned. It's mostly just, like, either being really mean or really passive. But I thought, all in all, the original Biff was a really good role. And I thought, like, for what a bully generally is, I thought that was really good. So I wanted to try to kind of honor that and get somebody who is, like, as equally able to do all of those things. And I went with Michael Pitt. Most people know Michael Pitt from Boardwalk Empire. He's been in several other things too. He was in the Gus Van Sant movie about Kurt Cobain, the name of which is escaping me at the moment, but he's been in a lot of different movies. You'd recognize his face. Last Days, that's it. Yeah. He was in The Dreamers, the Kieslowski movie. So he's really talented. He's a really good actor. And in Boardwalk Empire, he shows a lot of range in terms of sort of scheming, in terms of just being really mean and really kind of, you know, badass. But at the same time, there's always kind of that, there's a little bit of gentleness in his eyes. So he could, I think, fall back on that a little bit. So I, you know, he is genuinely scary in a lot of what he does. And I thought that would be a really interesting, addition to the cast. And so, like, I also thought about kind of that greaser look, about having, you know, his hair kind of pulled back and, you know, being in the 1950s and being able to take on that persona. And Boardwalk Empire is not in the 50s, mind you, but it's kind of that, you know, time out of place thing. And I thought he could do that really well. So yeah, Michael Pitt.
He looks like he's got a menace to him.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. I would not mess with that dude in high school. It's not like the big hulking bully, but he looks like the kind of guy that would lead a gang. And like in, you know, Biff, I didn't fully buy that. I got it just mostly because he was a jerk, you know what I mean? But I could see him as like a gang leader of just jerks, you know. I could see that hugely well with Michael Pitt. Lee, how about you? Who did you pick?
I wanted someone who was more of a tough guy, not so much of a bully, but someone I think who could ease into that role really well. And I went with Chris Hemsworth. And I think, nice. You know, he's if he gets rid of the 5 o'clock shadow, I think he could look young enough to still be in high school. and easily he could look, you know, we could age him to make him look a bit older. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this is a role that's kind of tailor-made for him.
It's pretty similar to his role in Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, yep.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
A little bit more bully, but still that sort of macho.
Yeah, the high school jock.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I love to see him just play it a little bit lighter, a little bit more comical, because he certainly is a very funny guy.
Definitely, yeah. Yep.
A little bit less Woods murder, too, which I think is probably to the benefit of Back to the Future.
Yeah, less jumping a motorcycle over a canyon and dying.
Yeah, yeah. Spoiler horn.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. Is that what happened?
It could be in several movies. You never know.
I'm completely making that up.
That could be in Thor. You never know.
Yep.
For all the motorcycle stunts that Thor does.
And for all the dying that he does in his movies.
As a demigod. Yes, true.
But, Jer, who did you have for this one?
When you think about Biff through the entirety of the trilogy, he actually ends up playing like 6 different characters.
That's true.
And Thomas Wilson surprisingly had a lot of range through all of that, from Mad Dog Tannen the Cowboy to 50s Biff to future Grandpa Biff to, you know, present day, the 2 different iterations of that. He showed a surprising amount of range and ability to both be funny but also maintain sort of a continual theme of the character through all those different iterations and manifestations of it. So, so like you guys, I was trying to think of somebody that is going to be able to pull off a lot of different things while still everybody going, "Yo, that's Biff." So I I put down Hemsworth, any Hemsworth. but since Chris has already picked, and the more I think about it, I think Liam makes a better choice anyway. I'm going to go with Liam Hemsworth. largely because he's not Chris Hemsworth, who was already picked, and also because of his character from The Hunger Games. He could pull off the high school greaser in the right makeup. He could pull off middle-aged Biff and so on through the Biff ages. So that's mine. Liam Hemsworth and or Chris Hemsworth. Maybe Chris plays adult Biff and Liam plays young Biff.
One of them plays Griff.
Are you shunning Luke Hemsworth?
And Luke Hemsworth plays Mad Dog Tannen.
And Skippy Hemsworth?
Luke Hemsworth can play Billy Zane's character.
Oh, nice. Yeah, he's 3D.
Nice. That's going to be a very...
Match.
Go ahead.
Match. Get it right.
That's going to be a very uncomfortable casting call when two brothers exactly. are trying out for the same role.
They'll just start fighting, and that just fits in with the role, so it works out well for everybody.
Perfect.
Just whichever Hemsworth is available at that moment.
Yeah.
I like it. All right, so for Biff Tannen, Andy chose Channing Tatum, Mark chose Sebastian Stan, I chose Michael Pitt, Lee chose Chris Hemsworth, and Jer chose any old Hemsworth, leaning towards Liam Hemsworth. So up next in the major role discussion is that of George McFly. Mark, tell us about George.
Thank you. I think I will. George McFly is everyone's favorite super nerd / sci-fi fan fiction writer / peeping Tom, because we all have a favorite one of those. He is generally incompetent socially, kinesthetically, and at being a peeping Tom, and it is the latter that eventually brings him and Lorraine together. Or maybe it's density.
Nice.
What made you change your mind, George? Last night, Darth Vader came down from planet Vulcan and told me that if I didn't take Lorraine out, that he'd melt my brain.
Yeah, well, let's just keep this brain-melting stuff to ourselves, okay?
Oh, yeah.
All right, okay. All right, there she is, George. Now just go in there and invite her.
Okay, but I don't know what to say.
Well, just say anything, George. Say, well, whatever's natural. Well, the first thing that comes into your mind.
Nothing's coming to my mind.
Jesus, George, it was a wonder I was even born.
What? What?
Nothing.
George is a really interesting character to me, and I love his portrayal by Crispin Glover. I'm a big Crispin Glover fan in general, but I think it was a tough thing to do to be as awkward as he was, but... still be kind of good looking, and also to come up with a kind of a spine near the end. So I had a really tough time casting this one, but in the end I had to key in on the awkwardness, and so I picked Jay Baruchel.
Oh, nice.
I bandied him about for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And well, he's got awkward in spades. But he also is a good looking guy and has some action credential. We, of course, know him from This Is the End most recently, but also of the How to Train Your Dragon series as the voice of Hiccup.
I loved him in that. He was perfect.
Yeah, me too.
There's another one coming next year. They just had a little teaser for it.
There's going to be three of them, actually.
Yeah, I see. Nice. I see listings for 2 and 3, and there's, of course, a whole series of shorts. He was also in Goon, which is now my favorite hockey movie.
We discussed him once. Yeah, already. Sorry, Lee. We discussed him once already, and there was the issue of having to probably shave him every 20 minutes to make sure he looked like he was
Breakfast Club
for
the Anthony Michael Hall role, maybe.
Yeah, well, thankfully, there's editing for that. So,
cut.
Fair enough.
Shave Baruchel again.
Well, maybe they can do like they did in 300, where they digitally enhance their abs. They'll just digitally shave him.
Just baby him up.
Yeah, just a lot of blur filter.
Yeah. Mark, I like what you said. A lot of Gaussian blur. Who is that? I don't even know. I can see his eyes, but his face is really hard to see.
Cutting edge filmmaking.
Yeah, we had to censor out that actor because of contract reasons.
It's just all pixely.
It's all Vaseline on the lens.
Mark, I like what you said when you were describing George about how like you kind of like him in spite of himself. And that, I mean, that laugh is just awful. And, you know, the haircut's kind of awful and his personality is kind of awful.
Yeah.
But you're really rooting for him. I mean, you're rooting for him because of the story, because you don't want, you know, Marty to die and the family to die. But it's like you kind of like him in spite of just being a total whiny, sniveling guy. But yeah, he's very much likable. And I think that's a good pick towards that end goal.
Cool. Thanks. Jer, let's hear what you have to say about old George.
Well, I kind of was in the same lines as you, erring on the side of the awkward over some of his other characteristics. Trying to imagine what he would eventually turn out to be, both in the beginning where he's sort of the sniveling loser, and then at the end where he's kind of a successful writer of science fiction. But the majority of the movie takes place in the 50s, and so really concentrating on that part of the character as a young high school student that is completely out of his element socially. And so I went with Jim Parson.
I thought about him. Oh. I like that.
From The Big Bang Theory.
Yep.
And I actually originally, we'll get to this later, but I originally had him in another role in the movie.
Envisioned
him, maybe. future Biff. No, I will talk about that later, but I had him earmarked somewhere else, and then I was like, you know, he would make a pretty excellent George McFly. He could just pull off just the bizarre persona that is Biff, and I really think that he could rein that in the adult arenas. Obviously, there'd have to be a heck of a makeup job on his baby face to make him look middle-aged, but I think that in 50s or whatever the movie would be taking place in the past, he would be just that perfect foil of somebody that you root for. You want him to succeed, you want him to get the girl and win the story, but he's just failing at it left and right.
He's Sheldon, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's right.
Gotcha. Yep. I just want to make sure I had the right big banger. Jesus, sorry.
The right nerd.
Wow, he's 40 years old.
Yeah. Jim Parsons is?
He's 40.
Yeah. I knew he was old, yeah.
He does not look it at all.
He's a complete baby face, yeah.
Wow. Yep.
Wow, that's
crazy. It would not take much to convince people that he's a high schooler.
No,
I don't think it would take a lot of work to make him, you know, people believe that he's also.
It's funny 40. That him being that old, that you have to try to. The emphasis of the makeup would be to make him look older, not younger.
Yeah, totally.
Yep, I like that a lot, Jer.
So that's my pick: Jim Parson, Sheldon, Lee. You are up next.
Thanks. I wanted someone. And you know, I agree with Mark that Crispin Glover did an amazing job. It's hard to think of anyone else as George McFly, just because he defined the role so well. But you know, I wanted someone who was a bit nerdier, I guess. I don't know. And I can't really talk about this guy so much because Jared just talked about him. I also went with Jim Parsons.
Nice. That's always hard. We're like, well, great, I'd like to say more.
Great pick.
But I can't.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I picked him for the aforementioned reasons. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, I defer to my previous representative.
But yeah, I think, I do think he's a really good fit for this role. I think he could play, you know, that sort of helpless guy with absolutely no self-confidence, and then boom, all of a sudden he finds it and he's very confident and becomes a success in his life.
Kyle, you've talked about before how in recasting and imagining, a lot of times what you'll do is take some of the quintessential lines that the character had spoken and imagine what the new actor would say. And I did that with Sheldon. And the one that sort of sold it for me was, "Hey, you, get your damn hands off her. You really think I ought to swear?"
Yeah.
I can just completely, I can completely see him doing that.
I could see that, or the speech in the diner where he says, you know, I'm your density, and you know, that one, I think that's equally a good representation of the character and all its bumblingness.
Mine was, last night Darth Vader came down from planet Vulcan and told me if I didn't ask her out, he'd melt my brain.
Nice.
We should keep this brain melting stuff.
That's a pretty well-written character. I got to say, now that we say that out loud, that's pretty good stuff.
It's outstanding. And Chris, and like Mark said, Crispin Glover does such a great job with it. He's such an odd person to begin with, and he really made the character exactly what it should be. Mm-hmm. Weird, awkward, and completely lovable most of the time.
So I'm gonna ask something like slightly bigger picture here, which is, did you guys cast for a trilogy for your choices, or did you just pick for Back to the Future 1? Because I did the latter. I didn't really think about what they'd be like in 2 or 3 necessarily. And Jared, sounds like for Biff especially, you did in particular.
No, well, not necessarily. I mean, I think that I wasn't really imagining that. What I was really more looking at when I was looking at how Thomas Wilson had played him, looking just how well he did it, because he did it in so many different manifestations of the role and the person. But I wasn't really imagining what he'd be, what the character or what the new actor would be like in the Old West or in the, you know, as a grandpa or anything like that. I was just more thinking about how Thomas Wilson did it and just kind of realizing just how broad he did that character and how well it was portrayed through the whole trilogy, but I didn't cast that way.
So it was appreciation, not sort of forward planning.
Yeah, it was more just kind of a, because I never really liked Thomas Wilson as much. I and then looking back at the whole trilogy, I'm like, wow, he really actually did a really good job with a lot of different roles, and he more so than any other actor. Got to play a whole amalgamation of people, where, you know, Marty McFly got to play him and then himself with an Irish accent. Crispin Glover kind of just did him and then him as a kid. And then, you know, the changes weren't quite as drastic as what Thomas Wilson got to do. And he did all of them really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did anybody else think about 2 and 3 when putting this together, or was it just 1 for the most part?
I know, I was just thinking about 1, but...
Same here.
Thinking about it now, I know that all of my picks would be just superb.
Well done. Nice. Good promotion there. Nice.
Played with the confidence of a man coming off a long rest.
Yes, indeed.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready.
Okay, so I believe I need to pass the baton to Andy.
I had a hard time with all these, but... you can't replace Crispin Glover in a Crispin Glover mode or mold or model or moldy model. So my pick for George McFly is a little bit of a reinvention of the character, but it's someone that I thought could do awkward pretty well. And especially when paired with my Lorraine actor, would definitely make an odd couple. I chose Josh Sussman. You may not recognize the name, but if you ever watched the show Glee, he is a recurring minor character in that, by the name of Jacob Ben Israel. He plays the reporter for the school newspaper who's got a Jew fro out to here, and just real, real awkward and kind of, he's an annoying character in the show. Like, he's this real nosy kind of, like, he's trying to expose the seedy underbelly of Glee, I guess, if that's a thing. But he's just really, really awkward and socially outcast and things like that. And I think that he would, if we were to reinvent the character a little bit to make him maybe a little less just really, really uncomfortably awkward, to just more of really nerdy and, you know, science club kind of thing, that I think Josh Sussman could do a good job at it.
If I knew Glee, I would comment.
Yeah, ditto. Ditto. I just looked him up and he certainly looks the part. Yeah.
So, all right, good. Well, thanks for the feedback, guys. I really, really appreciate it. It really helps me make my decisions.
Maybe you shouldn't pick things that no one's ever heard of, like Glee.
Ooh.
Wow.
Them singing words.
Quiet down, Jerry. Rap
battling. Because it's not like it's a super popular show that everybody's heard of and people watch all the
keep
time.
Backtracking.
Like, pick something that everybody
keep
knows.
Keep backtracking.
Like Goon, the hockey movie that no one saw.
That was sarcasm, you guys. Sarcasm.
Oh.
I'm not familiar with that.
Do we use that here?
Oh,
Kyle, please.
Colloquial right. Metaphor.
I'll close this up here. So yeah, we've all shown our appreciation for the George McFly character very well here. I wanted somebody that was like slightly less awkward, but a little bit more physically awkward and less personality-wise awkward, although he still has that a bit. So I wanted somebody that was a little bit smaller so that when you get to the big payoff scene, spoiler horn, when he decks Biff at the end, that is like a huge monumental achievement for him. And actually, they played that really well in the original with that fist curl and the shake. And I mean, that's like, you know, it's pretty much just biology taking over there. There's no thought to it. He's just all angry and dude like, you know, and kind of that testosterone driven thing. So I wanted someone that was like even smaller. And that I thought would, you know, that be a greater achievement because of that. And I thought he could be really just awkward and kind of put upon in general. And I thought could do both 1985 and 1955 well. And I chose Elijah Wood. You know, he is not a big guy. He's not a small guy, but he's not a big guy. You know, I think he can play really meek very well. I think he can play really awkward very well. I think he could deliver all of those lines very well. I can see him stumbling over some of those lines, like in the diner as well. It wouldn't be quite as painful, but you would still just wait for that to end and just kind of like slap your forehead a little bit, you know, like, oh man, George. So yeah, I went with Elijah Wood for that. And especially the size difference between him and Biff, I thought would be pretty, pretty awesome.
Nice. I like it.
Thanks.
He's a little George McFly-esque in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, yeah. Good call. I didn't even think about that as a reference, but yeah, totally. All right, so for George McFly, Mark chose Jay Baruchel. Jer and Lee both chose Jim Parsons. Andy chose Josh Sussman, and I chose Elijah Wood. So up next in the major characters is Lorraine Baines / McFly. Lee, tell us about Lorraine.
Sure. Marty's mother, Lorraine, is the kind-hearted and destined loved interest of George McFly. He is her density. Until Marty arrives in 1955 and literally gets in the way. She spends most of her time fighting off Biff's advances while chasing her son, you.
Just relax, Calvin. You've got a big bruise on your head.
Ah! Where are my pants?
Over there. On my hope chest. I've never seen purple underwear before, Calvin.
Calvin, why do you keep calling me Calvin?
That is your name, isn't it? Calvin Klein? It's written all over your underwear. Oh, I guess they call you Cal.
No, actually, people call me Marty.
Oh. Pleased to meet you, Calvin. Marty.
You.
You indeed. We're going to get to that later in a big way.
Yeah, we'll get to this later, but I chose an actress who is just getting started out, hasn't had a lot of really big roles yet, but has sort of had a breakout role recently. And just looking at her, I think, you know, she could look very young for the 1955 character, and she could, you know, with the help of some makeup, look much more mature in the 1985 character. And I went with Julianne Hough.
Nice.
If, you know, I think the most notably what she's been in is a romantic drama with Josh Duhamel called Safe Haven.
Also Footloose.
Yep, yeah, the Footloose remake.
Yep. And I haven't seen a lot of her, but, you know, seeing some of the trailers and the TV ads and interviews with her, I think she has the right kind of energy for Lorraine. So Julianne Hough.
She would look great in the 50s getup.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. It's weird thinking of Lorraine as a blonde. So, you know, that could totally work. It's just very different from how it was originally portrayed. But I dig that energy. I dig that. You know, when we're talking about, you know, Jared sort of tying back to that thing of like what scenes or what we would have them do or represent in their remake of like what you envision or what you try to see in your brain when you're thinking about other actors or actresses doing that. For me, I don't know why, but it's like I thought about the actresses that I was considering in really, really bad old age makeup and acting sort of like frailly drunk, you know, like, because I think I think a lot of people can play the 1955 pretty well. But I think in order to buy that, you have to have the origin story of who she is then to set up who she was in 55. You know what I mean? Like Marty is so surprised thinking that she was, you know, so chaste and so good. And then it turns out that she was kind of a hussy in 1955. So it's like, that needs to be a real surprise. And so for me, it was like thinking of the actors or the actresses that I was considering in the 1985 time at the beginning of the movie and how they would work with that. And then I thought secondarily of the 1955, even though that takes up more time. You know, I just think there's more people that can do the 55. So I'm struggling with her in the 85 part of it, kind of the older, but I think she could do it pretty well. So, yeah.
Dropping the prison cake on the table and smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think right now she's the same age that Leah Thompson was when she played the role.
I think so.
Nice.
Yep.
So,
yep. Yeah. Good pick.
But, yeah. Kyle, I believe you're next.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, just talked a little bit about the origin of why I chose what I did. And, you know, it's an interesting character. And I remember really, really like digging Leah Thompson back in the day. And as I watched it this time, I was like, I liked her. Like as a kid, I was like, oh, she's cute, you know? And now I'm kind of like, oh man, she's kind of annoying. I mean, she's pretty, she's beautiful, no doubt. But like, I was so annoyed with like how she spoke in the 50s. Like her, it was like this whiny nasally thing. I don't know. It was just like her accent, if you will, in that movie, just kind of like grated on me. So I wanted someone that could have a slightly less affected performance, but could still totally nail that 30 years in the quote unquote future, you know, older makeup bit. So I went with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Nice. You might know her from Scott Pilgrim versus the World. She's been in lots of other works. The Thing, probably most recently. She was in not the last Die Hard movie, but the one before that. Actually, she's been in a couple. She plays Bruce Willis's daughter. But she's a really, really good actress and like very, very subtle in what she does, but not in a way like sometimes you can say that someone doesn't act very well, that they're subtle and that they can't act. You know what I mean? But like, I truly think that she is a good actress. Like
Keanu
I think
Reeves in Scott Pilgrim. Is subtle.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you can say subtle when in fact it just means that they can't go outside like 5% in any direction of their persona. And I think she can do that, but I wouldn't necessarily want her to do so for this. So I just think she's really sweet. I think she's really good. And I can totally see her being that sort of like, you know, wrinkly, cigarette smoking, vodka swilling 1985 mom too. So yeah,
Kyle,
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
I'm really disappointed in myself for not picking her. And so...
Wow.
I have to say, damn you, Kyle. Damn you.
Haha, I'll take it. I'll take the curses.
You could have done a last-minute audible, and no one would have needed to have known, Mark.
Except Kyle would have known, and then he would have told us all.
That's true.
That's right.
Yeah, it would have laid festering in the depths of my soul.
She also played Mary Todd Lincoln in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Yeah, that she did. I did not see that, but that is true. I would not use that as a source for my inspiration, but that's cool.
I have the poster on my wall behind me right now.
Oh, really? Nice.
That surprises me.
Source of inspiration
not at all.
For him.
Jared does love vampire slayers.
It's true. It's true.
And Abraham Lincoln.
And Abraham Lincoln. Yes.
It's right next to my Abraham Lincoln bobblehead doll.
Nice. And it just got creepy. Nice. So, Jer, I will hand it off to you with that that perfect segue. Who did you pick for Lorraine?
Abraham Lincoln. Oh, so okay, I'm going to make a slight confession that Kyle has already kind of begun in his own childhood world as well. But I definitely also had a Leah Thompson little kid thing looking at this movie from the eyes of a preteen into a early teens and just thinking how just adorable Leah Thompson was. And so that may have clouded my judgment a little bit in trying to find a suitable replacement for her. And so I chose Isla Fisher.
Oh, that's awesome.
Uh-huh. Very nice.
And yes, I watched a YouTube video to understand how to pronounce her name.
Nice. Good work.
Yep. That exists, by the way. So I think that she could play the 50s. Seems like a good girl. Turns out she's got a little bit of a streak in her. And
yeah, totally.
I would totally dig that in all of the wrong ways. But then I also think that she could, based on some of the things that she's been doing lately, she could also pull off the beaten down by the world mom that's just kind of turned into this chain smoking, blue collar, just sort of suburbanite that's just kind of world weary. And not that that's, like you said, a primary part of the character, but it is important to have that, to have the rest of it make sense. So that's who I went with, just because I want to see it.
Of all the scenes like that you can think of to base that upon, so like if we were to Frankenstein a Lorraine character, I would totally cast her for the last third of the movie, like the scene in the car, which again we'll get to later about how jacked up that is, but like the scene where she basically like pounces on where she's like drinking and she kind of like pounces on Marty, that I can totally see that. And some of that is from Wedding Crashers, where she plays like a semi-virginal but actually super duper sex crazed lady. So I could totally see that. Like I think it's a good choice overall, but that to me is like that's the Lorraine for her.
The two scenes that sort of completely perfectly imagined her. The first one is when Marty first meets her in the 50s, when he wakes up in her bedroom and I had a horrible nightmare, I dreamt that I went back in time. And so she's sort of like sitting there very proper on the bed, and then it very quickly escalates to something improper. mm-hmm. Oh my God, it's my mother. And that one. And then when Marty's running around the town square on the skateboard and she's like, he's an absolute dream. And like just is completely infatuated with him following around and stuff, like just her becoming completely infatuated, but also the shy parts of the character at the beginning, I think. And then even in the relationship with George McFly, she gets a little awkward and a little shy at those points as well. So that's my pick, and I'm sticking to it.
It's a good pick. It.
What were you going to say, Lee? I interrupted you. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that she's in the latest season of Arrested Development. She's hilarious.
She is hilarious.
Oh, she is the best part of that whole fourth season.
Yes.
Andy.
Jer.
Who did you pick for Lorraine Baines McFly?
I picked Taylor Swift.
Bad pick. Oh. Mark, who did you pick?
Hey, at least I didn't show up 45 minutes late for our podcast call.
The claws come out.
I picked Taylor Swift. She's not done a ton of acting, but even in some of her videos and commercials and in the occasional acting spot that she's done, I think she plays her just general public image is very kind of clean cut and squeaky clean, seems to fit right into the 1950s in that sense. But I could see her very easily flipping that switch and having that undercurrent of, misbehaving and drinking and smoking and parking with the boys. And I think putting the post 30 year makeup on her and kind of in the beginning giving her a vodka and tonic and having her stumble around with the parole cake, things like that, to me just kind of makes me laugh to picture that. So I picked Taylor Swift, and it's a good pick, Jer. A good pick.
I'll back Andy on this one.
Thank you, Mark.
It's a decent pick.
I see the potential.
Kyle.
Andy, I'm just going to give you a I'm gonna give you the Andy Umbridge I think here are moments that I think Taylor Swift would do really well as Lorraine. Okay, so here's just one moment, for example, that I think she would do stellar. So let's just say there's a scene where she inexplicably has 2000s bangs that are kind of like down in her eyes. She's got kind of like an overly red lipstick on. She seems to be slightly reflective, but not in a way that actually indicates intellectualism. And then she looks right at the camera. So if there are any moments in our Back to the Future moment that reflect that, I think she would just knock that out of the park. The other 98 minutes of the movie, I just really find her lacking in that performance.
Mark, how about you and I can talk about how this is a good pick?
I'll say this. I think that she's definitely a better actor than a singer.
Okay. I think that's a compliment.
It means I see the potential.
Okay.
She's also just a theatrical sort of person. I think she's still going to have to work pretty hard to convince me, but I see the potential.
And really, I think that putting her, I mean, granted, you got to change her hairstyle and that, Kyle.
I'll say you might also need to pick a Marty that's quite tall.
That's true. She is a tall person. I mean, put her in a poodle skirt and a 1950s sweater, and I think that she would fit into that era really without much effort. And I think that she just has that earnestness about her that, to me, speaks very much to the 1950s high schooler.
Yeah, I will say that I think she is extraordinarily talented. I think she just needs to, this is not like damned praise or faint praise or whatever, but I think she is extraordinarily talented. I think she could be an excellent actress. I think she just needs to get out of whatever early 20s sort of, it's not ennui, but it's just it's sort of like an emotional apathy.
Well,
she doesn't want to emote in any way. She needs to get out of that. And then when she does that, I think she'll be really interesting. Right now, she's just super boring to me.
I think that's a public persona that her record label and everything else is created for, because it sells records, and I don't blame them for it. But I agree. I mean, she is very publicly, she's one dimensional and has been for a while, but formula ain't broke, so why fix it? That's probably what they're thinking.
Fair enough.
For the time being.
Yep. Yeah, I think it could be a really good role in spite of the fact that I was a total jerk about it. But I think that I just don't trust, based on where she is right now, that she would go there. And it's not like this is a Jennifer Connelly in Requiem for a Dream kind of role where she's throwing herself out there in every way, shape, or form. But I think she would have to, she would have to go outside of that comfort zone a little bit. So
now Mark
maybe
and
this
I will.
Would be her this would be her third movie. I don't care what the first two are, but this would need to be her third
okay,
movie.
Fair
I
cannot enough.
See this as her first
fair
one.
Enough. So now Mark and I will go talk about our own podcast over here.
You guys go talk about Taylor Swift together. That's not weird.
Speaking of posters on the wall, Mark, who did you pick for Lorraine Baines McFly?
Sorry, I just need to breathe again. My pick for Lorraine is Alice Eve.
Uh-huh. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about her chemistry with Jay Baruchel when I cast her, but
clever.
The more I thought about it, the more I realized it's a brilliant pick. she's had some prominent roles lately, like Star Trek Into Darkness, mm-hmm. and Men in Black 3 and The Raven. Or where I noticed her was in a movie called She's Out of My League, opposite Jay Baruchel, where mm-hmm. she is the lead in that one, and she really puts a lot into that role. That could have been very, very one-dimensional. Instead, she makes it mini-dimensional, if that's a thing. Anyway.
Nice. I've not seen that, so I'm going to add it to my queue right now.
Also add Star Trek. That was a good one.
Yeah, she did well in Star Trek. I enjoyed her overall.
It was unfortunately a very poorly written, a very underwritten character.
Yes.
But she did a fine job.
Yeah, with a gratuitous underwear scene that even afterwards, Damon Lindelof was like, yeah, sorry about that. To every, even to the nerd world. The nerd world was like, really? Come on. And when the nerd world says that, it's pretty egregious. So, yeah. Good call, Mark. I like that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think she would rock every part of this role. As much as I regret not casting Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I don't regret it because Alice Eve would do a fantastic job.
Backpedal. Right on. All right, so for Lorraine Bane / McFly, originally played by Leah Thompson, Lee went with Julianne Hough. I went with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Or is it Huff? How? Huff? Huff.
I think it's
Julianne Huff. I went with Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Huffy.
Jer went with Isla Fisher. Andy went with Taylor Swift. And Mark went with Alice Eve. Now we're down to the two big major characters, the first of which is Doc Emmett Brown. Jer, tell us about Doc.
Oh, man. Well, Doc Brown is a crazy wild-eyed scientist. Actually, he's the crazy wild-eyed scientist. Doc Brown embodies all the cool parts of what a mad scientist is without all the frightened townspeople and torches and pitchforks and whatnot. Doc Brown is a lifelong scientist who finally invented something cool when some brain trauma induced a vision of a flux capacitor, which is what makes time travel possible. Christopher Lloyd played Doc Brown in the original perfectly. He was the right amount of manic and somewhat believable scientist, but also just a very genuine person, not out for, you know, monetary gain, just out to invent things because that's what he does. He's an inventor. He's a scientist, and somehow is befriended by Marty McFly, and they have some kind of like buddy thing, and Marty hangs out at his house playing his amp and so forth. But so it was. This one, out of all the characters, was the hardest to recast for me. And I went one direction that I really liked, and then at the last second I changed it. But both directions started at the same point, and they started with Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, that's right on.
So I picked
excellent.
I picked Sam Rockwell as Doc Brown, and the first way that I did it was Sam Rockwell in 1985, or in the present, whatever we do with that, is about Sam Rockwell's age, that late 40s, early 50s. Actually, he might even be older than that now, but somewhere in that category. So then in the past, Marty goes back in time to the past and meets Doc Brown, who, if he's, let's say, 55, he goes back in the past, and now he's, what, 25, 30 years earlier. So I would have a hard time seeing Sam Rockwell play a 25-year-old, and so my original idea was Sam Rockwell would play Doc Brown as he is now, and in the past, it would be Jim Parson.
Oh, interesting.
So that was my first idea, and then I scrapped that because I wanted Jim Parson to be George McFly. So now it's going to be Sam Rockwell. We're going to age him a little bit in the present, so he's going to be an older, wild-haired, crazy-eyed scientist, and then in the past we'll age him down a little bit, so he's, you know, in that late 30s-ish, you know, adult but not a kid anymore, that I think Sam Rockwell could still play. So in the present, he's old scientist, similar to what they kind of did with Christopher Lloyd, although it's really hard to tell what they were trying to do with his age.
Yeah.
But do something along those lines. Give him a crazy wig and make his hair all crazy, wild scientist. And then, you know, make his hair a little bit more presentable in the past and make him a little bit more normal aged. So there's my long-winded Sam Rockwell speech.
I like it.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's good stuff. The thing that's hard for me, and I would love to hear how you guys went this route with this particular character, was how much to appreciate Christopher Lloyd, but not recast Christopher Lloyd, but recast the role. That was really hard for me, like trying to separate it from Christopher Lloyd. I mean, it was a brilliant performance, and it, you know, defined who he was as an actor in a huge, huge way. But I wanted to try to have it be its own thing, you know, like have it be a mad scientist, but not have it be like a Christopher Lloyd-esque mad scientist, just like a mad scientist that would fit itself well in here. So I think, you know, Sam Rockwell could do both of those things, and I think that speaks ably to his abilities in a big way. You know, we've spoken of him a lot, and we've talked about this a little bit, and Andy, you and I have talked about this, about kind of having a blacklist of sorts. So those actors and or actresses, or even, you know, movies that we reference that get picked a lot, we might have to put in the penalty box or the like.
I say we call film it spotting, like they call the, it the Hall of Fame. They are retired.
Yeah, they call it the Parthenon. I think in film spotting parlance, which is basically just like, you know, a place where things go to just, you know, be great, but we cannot pull from them. So I'm really close to Sam Rockwell being one of our first, maybe Sam Rockwell and Alison Brie are our first inductees into the Hall of Fame / Parthenon / whatever.
Let me just edit my last two picks here real quick.
Oh, awkward. So Alison Brie is Marty. Oh my goodness.
What I would say to that, Kyle, and I agree with you, is, and I think Christopher Lloyd brought a lot of his character from Taxi into.
Yes, he did.
Doc Brown.
Oh yeah, good call.
And I think that I would love to see Sam Rockwell play it with the same sort of frenetic energy, like just this, not bumbling, but very scatterbrained, but not do a Christopher Lloyd impression by any means, but have the same kind of energy, kind of similar to some of his character from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm, yeah.
And then, I've referenced this movie before, and I'm sure that most of you haven't seen it, but a little bit of his character from
Galaxy Quest.
Gentleman Broncos. Galaxy Quest 2. But yeah, just pulling a lot of just kind of the eccentricities of those characters and the energy, because I think that's the key to this character, is that we could have a lot of people play scientists and they could be very dry and they could be very nerdy and they could be very scientist-y. But what made Christopher Lloyd so good is that he had so much energy, and he would, the whole scene when, and I think actually this woman might have been in Back to the Future too, but when the Marty and Doc Brown are pacing up and down the hallway of the school back and forth, and Marty's just sort of trying to follow him as he's just rambling about the space-time continuum and the past and the future and all this different thing, and he's always kind of a step behind, and it's just back and forth towards the camera, away from the camera, towards the camera, away from the camera, as he's just nonstop talking, and that kind of stuff I think would just be... I think Sam Rockwell could do an excellent job without doing a Christopher Lloyd impression, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's right on.
So that's my story, and now I would like to bounce past the baton to Andy.
Kerthonk. I don't think batons do that.
You just have to work really hard at it, yeah.
If you bounce them right.
Jared and I have been practicing the baton bounce pass for years. That's awkward.
You've gotten it at least twice.
I will.
Well, we started practicing it because it accidentally worked once.
We're like, so we could totally do this again.
We could do this again.
We could take it on the road. It could be a thing. I'm going to first give a to your Sam Rockwell pick, mostly because of your description of how you want him to be frenetic and mind going faster than his mouth, kind of energy that Christopher Lloyd, but don't want him to do a Christopher Lloyd impression, because I think that's going to be hard to separate from people who know the movie well and will... I mean, they're just going to know the character. So any representation of that character, they're going to be like, let's see, how does this compare with the Christopher Lloyd portrayal?
So you're saying that he would need to be so drastically different?
Well, I just don't. I think it would. There would have to be enough differences in there to make Sam Rockwell's performance stand on its own 2 feet, I guess is what I'm saying. Because I think he would do great. I'm not saying it's a bad pick at all. I think he would do great. I just think we would need to make the character such that it wouldn't seem like an homage, if that makes sense.
It would be kind of like in purgatory of like nearly Christopher Lloyd, but not far enough away that it would be his own thing.
But like you said, Jerry, there is enough source material, I think, from Sam Rockwell that it's not too much of a stretch for him. Like it wouldn't be Ewan McGregor or someone. I don't know why I picked him. His first name.
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. All of a sudden trying to play, you know, Doc Brown. Like that would be obvious and awkward, but Sam Rockwell is a little better, so...
Andy, what's your pick?
Nice. Sorry, good work, Mark. Sorry. Good redirection.
Andy! Who let Mark back on the podcast? I picked Jason Schwartzman for this pick. Indeed.
Wow.
That's a lot of umbrages coming my way.
That was an admiration umbrage.
Thank you.
That was not
Thank
a straight-up umbrage.
I think that he would play this... I would love to see him play it in a much drier vein. I think he could certainly act... the loony and things like that, but not, I don't think if, like Jason Schwartzman, for example, would be someone that if he tried to play it as Christopher Lloyd played it, it would be weird, in my opinion. But if he tried to play this differently and add his own energies to it, to be, like I said, a lot drier. There's a lot of, like, he's got a lot of really throwaway one-liners in the movie that I never really picked up on before that I think Jason Schwartzman would do well to just kind of let him go, just, or not, you know, to deliver the line in such a way as to maybe make it a little funnier and stand up a little more. So Jason Schwartzman, there you are.
Nice. I like it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd have a harder time with the older. I think the younger one. He's just a really awkward age for that.
He is.
He's like kind of in between.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think it's a good pick. I just don't think it's the right pick. But I like that you went for it. No, it sounds
like
a total
slam.
I like
that you tried. It's sweet.
Yeah, no.
It's adorable.
I would love to see what he would try to do. I just don't think it would succeed, if that makes sense.
But let me guess, your pick probably would. Yeah, I hear you.
I don't know. I hope so. We'll see.
Jerk.
I could fail as well.
Mark, who do you got? Bounce past Chris Unk.
Then I drop the baton. I was thinking along the same lines as Andy, where I kind of want to see an actor play this role a little bit more dryly. And I was kind of thinking that Neil Patrick Harris would be the perfect person. Except I should say it without the question mark at the end. Neil Patrick Harris would be the perfect person.
So you're saying that's your pick?
That's my pick.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
And I would love to see him play it a little bit straighter, but maybe somebody that is as nutty as Christopher Lloyd portrayed him, but trying to rein it in. I was thinking something along the lines of a combination of his characters from How I Met Your Mother and Starship Troopers.
Ooh.
And wow. you can throw in a little bit of his Dr. Horrible.
Yeah.
You know, he actually kind of looks a little bit like Christopher Lloyd in a way.
Mm-hmm.
In a way.
Like I could see you put the Christopher Lloyd wig on him and I could be like, I got you there.
Yeah, no.
There's a Christopher Lloyd wig?
Probably.
Man, there should be. There's one on my head right now. yeah, I would love to see the transformation of the present Doc Brown with the wild hair and the lab coat, blah blah blah, like we see him in the existing film. But then back in 1955, we see Neil Patrick Harris and maybe the combed hair, I don't know, an actual haircut, some glasses, a sweater vest, just a little bit more kempt, maybe a pipe.
A pipe.
Yes, pipe. But yes, I think just like a straighter and trying to be a more controlled version of the Doc is what I'd love to see from Neil Patrick Harris. I think he would do it masterfully.
I can see that. Yep.
Yep. I agree.
Do you see it masterfully? Because that's what would happen.
Well, I could see him attempting masterfully.
I can see it novice-fully. I don't know about masterfully.
Amateurishly?
Trust me.
A little beyond amateur.
Beginnerly? Novice. By the way, I would like everyone to know that there is a Christopher Lloyd wig.
Nice.
Well, and those on the podcast can find the link that I just sent to them.
We'll put in the show notes, which you can find at mathishard.net.
You might want to hurry because it's on eBay. It might not be there long.
That's got to be on Amazon too. White men's wig, Doc Brown, Back to the Future, Christopher Lloyd, Mad Scientist New. Wow. There's some good eBay SEO right there.
And by the picture, you can tell it looks just like him.
Yeah. It's like, it could also tie in with if you wanted to go as Amadeus for Halloween as well.
Okay, Lee, take it away.
Well, you know, I think Jer has been hacking into my email because I kind of had a similar idea as he did. One of the problems that I had with the storytelling of this movie is the fact that Doc Brown doesn't look any different from 1985 to 1955.
Mm-hmm.
And most people I know, when they live 30 years, they look different. So I wanted to have someone... I essentially cast two people. As the 1985 Doc Brown, I chose Gary Oldman.
Huh.
Nice.
Because, I think, you know, he's got that energy that Christopher Lloyd did. And I mean, I don't want to reference him too much because I recast the character, not the actor. But he's got that energy. He's certainly funny. And I think he's a terrific actor, and I would totally buy him as a scientist. As the 1955 Doc Brown, I picked Sam Rockwell.
Nice. They even kind of look alike.
I've talked about this before, that I think Sam Rockwell just looks like a younger Gary Oldman. And I think that they both have very similar acting styles. And So that's what I did. I guess I know we're only supposed to pick one actor. So I suppose if I have to pick one.
Nope, don't even do it. Don't even do it.
There's no rule that says that.
There is no rule here. Yeah.
Christ, Dell's picked a dead guy.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. I did a CG. Klaus Kinski. Oh, man. After that, anything goes. When the inventor of the podcast casts a dead guy.
Next time I'm picking a Lego character. Come on.
Yeah.
Out the window.
All bets are off. Yep.
No, Lee, I love that you did that. I think that's awesome. Like, that's taking the thin limitations that we put around this and being like, yep, here's what I'm going to do. I love that. Yep. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. I think that, and it would be fun for the two of them to, you know, I would like to see their interpretations of the character, their own interpretations, like how they play them, and then how they sort of merge that into, you know, a consistent performance for both of them.
And so, I'm sorry if you were
so, no, go ahead.
I'm just imagining now the sequel in Back to the Future 2 when the Doc Browns sort of bump into each other a little bit, and there's a little bit of them sort of passing and having to avoid each other.
Oh, yeah,
I can see them both having a lot of fun with that.
That would be very cool. Yep.
Nice. Good call.
My only question is, isn't Gary Oldman and Sam Rockwell pretty much the same age?
Oh, no.
They're about 10 years apart.
Really?
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, Gary Oldman can play all ages very, very well. And just throw a mustache on him.
So can Sam Rockwell.
And Gary Oldman leans towards the elder side of the age range, and I think Sam Rockwell can be easily made to look much younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Sam Rockwell still looks like he's in his 30s, even though I know he's in his 40s. Mm-hmm. But
yep. Yeah. He can play that
almost 50s, I think.
Yeah. But Kyle, bring us home.
All right. So the characteristic, again, I wanted to try to detach from Christopher Lloyd's original performance fairly significantly, mostly in terms of look. Like, I didn't want to replicate his look. What I wanted to replicate was kind of that manicness and kind of that physical energy, especially in the past. Like, the degree of physical energy that he has is pretty astounding for like a quote unquote, you know, like a non-young actor, let's say. He's not like an action star by any means, but he's really, you know, he's up on that clock tower. Admittedly, it was probably a stunt double, but like in theory, he was, you know, a pretty physical role and he has that presence. And I wanted somebody that could have a similar type of presence. And I wanted somebody that is a good physical actor. And so that was kind of the first thing that I looked at. And this is admittedly kind of weird, but I'm super excited about it. And I think it's a great pick. And I went with Bruce Campbell for Doc Emmett Brown.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
That is a good one.
Thank you. So if you don't know Bruce Campbell, visit the Evil Dead movies, Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness. He's done several things since then, but specifically see the scene where, and this is a little gruesome, but just bear with me, where he has to cut his hand off in Evil Dead 2, and then he kind of acts around it, or prior to when he has to cut it off and he's like hitting the plates over his head. It's one of the most amazing bits of physical acting I've ever seen. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking like Monty Python, any kind of physical comedy. I mean, it is astounding, and I don't think he has lost that. He's a little pudgier than he once was, but I think, you know, I think he would do really, really well both in the 55 and the 85, and I think he can look, he looks like 40s right now, so it'd be like a stretch both in terms of being 50 and in terms of being however old, 30 or 60 and 30, but I think he could do both of those equally well. And I just think that energy with him would be astounding. I just would love to see him saying some of those, like, you know, those big wide-eyed moments that Christopher Lloyd has. Oh, so God. Like, that's what I would honor in that performance, that big wide-eyed, oh my God, what's going on manicness. And I think he could do that really well.
Could we work in some way for him to just casually say, oh yeah, that's my boomstick. Like, just referring to something on the side of his workshop, I think.
Absolutely. That he invented.
Yep. The stick that goes on the car that hits the lightning rod at the end, that's his boomstick.
That's his boomstick. Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So Bruce Campbell is my guy. So for Doc Emmett Brown, originally played by Christopher Lloyd, Jer went with Sam Rockwell. Andy chose Jason Schwartzman. Mark chose Neil Patrick Harris. Lee chose Gary Oldman, and I chose Bruce Campbell. Now, the main role of the movie, Marty McFly / Calvin Klein, originally played by Michael J. Fox. Marty McFly, the main character in Back to the Future, has to fend off, in order of intensity, Libyans, bullies, and the romantic advances of his mother, all the while trying not only to get back to his own time, but to do so without killing himself and his siblings, and possibly everyone else. No pressure, Marty. this is a really, really iconic role. I mean, you know, Michael J. Fox did, what was it, Family Ties? Was that the sitcom that he did? So he was known for that. But I mean, when if you say Michael J. Fox, the first thing you think of is Marty McFly. I mean, in an instant, there's no hesitation with that. And he did that so well. And the charisma that he had and the likability that he had in this was really, I would say, almost unmatched in terms of, you know, that age of actors and actresses for that time, especially in an action movie. You know, we look at The Breakfast Club and those are iconic, but in a hugely different way. But his performance here was just astounding. So I give him huge props for that. So it was really hard for me to try to match that or to try to even get anywhere near that nowadays. I think that's really, really challenging. The one person that I thought of is someone that's been mentioned here before that I think is just a really, he's got a great energy. He's got great eyes. He's got like a kind of a great soul to him, if you will, which sounds strange for someone that's pretty young. But that's Nicholas Holt. What you might have most recently seen him in is Warm Bodies, which is sort of a zombie dramedy, if you will. It's really interesting and really, really well done. He also played Hank McCoy, who became Beast in X-Men First Class, and he's going to be in X-Men Days of Future Past. He was in Jack the Giant Slayer.
He was in About a Boy as the Boy.
About a Boy, yeah, as a kid, too. Yeah, so, I mean, he's been around for a while, so he's, you know, well-versed in the Hollywood ways. He can do action. He can do drama. I just think he's got a really good energy that he can be really energetic. I don't think he can be quite Michael J. Fox energetic, but I don't know really anyone that can, to be honest. And that's okay. I just want to do the role as best as we can. And I think he's as good as we can get now.
I agree.
That sort of sounds like a backhanded compliment, but I think it's totally true.
I think that's a fantastic
pick. He's the best option we have.
Yeah.
He might be in our Remakers Mark Hall of Fame as well.
Yeah,
I think
we've
talked to him a couple of times.
I've picked him once.
Yep. Yeah, he's close. He's a couple away, I think. Maybe we'll have like five picks equals Hall of Fame.
He's not Allison Brie status yet, but
yeah, not quite. So Lee, how about you? Who did you pick for Marty?
Well, I wanted someone who is a little less well known, someone who's been around for a while, but maybe not a mega superstar. And thinking of my George and Lorraine picks, this pick kind of makes sense because the two of them together, I could see them having a son look like my actor. And I picked Thomas Dekker.
Nice.
And I don't know if anyone's real familiar with him, but most notably what I knew him from was the Terminator series when that was on. He played John Connor. And I think he was in the Nightmare on Elm Street reboot that came out a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think he's really versatile. He can be very intense. He can be very funny. And yeah, he looks like what I imagine Jim Parsons and Julie Huff's kid would look like. So yeah,
nice.
I like him a lot for this one.
Good planning. Yeah. I've only watched a few episodes of that, the Terminator show, but I really liked him and that I thought that was good. It's this role is just so hard to cast for. I mean, it's just like,
yes, it is.
It's like finding the golden egg, you know? I mean, it's just really, really hard to do. So it's like, it just sounds so damning, but it's like, well, you know, that's as good as we can do. I mean, you know, it's just really, really how it is. At least that's how I think of it. So we'll see what one others present. But yeah.
And I think he still looks young enough to be a high schooler. So,
Yep. Cool.
So let's see. I believe Andy is up.
I am. I got to be careful here because otherwise I'm going to put the show Glee into the Hall of Fame almost inadvertently.
So we never have to talk about it again?
Easy there, Tiger.
And then I'm going to have a special episode devoted entirely to Glee. In fact, we're going to start calling you Glee, Lee.
Never.
Ouch.
Ouch. But I echo everything that everyone has said so far and how difficult it is to cast this. And I don't think you should attempt to replace Michael J. Fox. But I picked Kevin McHale. Not the basketball player, although he would be pretty interesting in this role to really reinvent the story. No, Kevin McHale, the actor who is probably most well known for playing Artie on the Glee series, which is, for those of you who only have a passing awareness of him, he is the character who is wheelchair bound. But in reality, and I picked him for a couple of reasons. I think he has the age range, the energy, and general likability that were strengths of Michael J. Fox at the time of the making of the movie. But he's also got a lot of musical talent in terms of singing and dancing and hopefully playing some instruments, which is one thing that...
He is a guitarist, is he not?
I hope so. I didn't actually research that. But that's one thing that kind of bugged me about this movie was Michael J. Fox's guitar playing. So it would be nice to have a character who could actually sing Johnny B. Goode.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's something like that. So I think he would have a lot of... He would just be very comfortable up there doing that, which is something that I think the character is intended to be. You know, once he kind of gets over the, oh, I'm playing at a high school dance in 1955, then he just kind of rips into it and goes. So I think that would be a real strength for him. But he's got a lot of the other qualities to the character that I think would play well to his natural strength. So Kevin McHale, not the Boston Celtics legend, but the actor from Glee.
I think it's a fine pick.
Yeah, I dig it.
Thank you.
So I have to say, in terms of people who faked playing the instrument, this may be the best fakery that I've seen.
And that's true.
He was playing. He was playing in B flat. He was doing the blues riffs. Like he was sliding.
That was supposed to be in B.
It was,
yeah, well, he B. says it's in B, but everybody knows Johnny B. Goode's in B flat. So I mean, that's a move. That's a writing error, not a performance error. So he's playing it in the key that he's supposed to. So that's a whole other music nerd thing. But like, so I mean, he did quite well. Like it passed my test for being like, all right, that's close enough.
I will say he did well in the fact that they edited it so much. And he's moving around the stage so much that you can hardly see him play. Like he's twisting and spinning and on his back. I mean, that's intentional to make it look like, wow, he's just going crazy, but it's also intentional so you can't see what he's doing with his hands. So,
yeah, Michael J. Yes. Fox does play the guitar. So.
And yeah. I agree, Kyle, that this is probably one of the better fake playing, you know, demonstrations, but it's still fake playing. And I would just love to see an actor. And I don't know if Kevin McHale can actually do this. Mark, you think that he can, and I'm going to go with that factoid, but to have a character or an actor who could just get up there and actually do it. So I think that would be pretty neat to see.
I like it.
That's wishful thinking on my part.
Yep.
So
Mark, having played that lead in the band that we have all played in at one time or the other, or that riff, out of a 1 to 10 scale, how would you rate his fakery in Back to the Future?
As far as fakery goes, I'm not sure if I would give it a 6 or a 7. I mean, it seems clear to me that that he had some competence in guitar, and even in melodic playing, single note playing, lead guitar. But it also seemed clear that he wasn't playing what the soundtrack was doing.
It was proximity based Johnny B. Goode.
Yeah,
Johnny B. Goode by proxy.
Yep.
Yeah, he was kind of doing the hand grenade approach to it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yep.
The amp kick was nice.
Yeah, that's true. The obvious Gibson tie-in amp kick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, who's your Marty?
Well, this I think this pick is probably my most ham-fisted of the night, but my pick for Marty McFly is Zac Efron.
It's not ham-fisted at all. I think that's spot on.
I think, you know, I think that he would bring all the swagger that Marty has, and he's definitely in the right age range. He can definitely play a rock star. My only worry is about him being a little bit too polished, but from what I've seen of him, I mean, he's a very accomplished actor, and I've been impressed. So
I mean,
it might be,
sorry Mark, go ahead.
I was just say it might be a little bit like fastball up the middle, but I think it's a good pick.
I could see a movie poster being made for this if once Zac Efron is announced and the tagline could just be like, who else would it be?
Yeah. We've used the term on the nose before, and that can be used both damningly and praisingly. And in this case, I would use it praisingly. You know what I mean? Like you can cast in a way that is obvious and in a way that is like, oh, not again. Right.
Yeah,
but I think he is polished because of the movies that he has either chosen or been in, or the TV show that he's been in, or the image that he has presented. But I think he is not entirely that. I think he could be a little bit looser. I think he could be a little bit more, a little bit less. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. I totally lost it. Sorry. I'm a podcaster.
I like that Zac Efron has enough like self-awareness to make fun of the character of himself that's been made. I will reference specifically when he was a host of Saturday Night Live and they did a skit about High School Musical, like as he's coming back and he's telling the graduating class, like, the real world isn't what we think. There's no one sings everything, and it's a cruel, cold place. Like, to me, that's really funny. And that's him saying, yeah, I know what I've become, and I can make fun of myself. I like that about him. I think that would I could see him doing very well in this.
Yeah, or I thought about 17 again when, especially at the beginning of that film where he plays a little bit more clueless. I thought that fit in really well with the character of Marty McFly.
Yep, I like that a lot. I think that's right on.
Cool. Thank you. All right, Jer, wrap this one up, please.
I won't speak too long on this one because we've already brought him up once for a different role, but I went with Jay Baruchel. I think that he would bring the right kind of heart and energy to the role, specifically citing his voice work for How to Train Your Dragon and then some of the more recent stuff. Again, you have to shave his beard fairly frequently, but I think that he could pull off the young high school student who's trying to start his band and friends of the scientist and all that kind of stuff, but then also just be a very good, likable hero to the story and, trying to get his mom and dad together and all that kind of stuff. And I could see him doing all of the important parts of that role as I imagine them.
Yep, I think that's good. I don't have quite the sense of charisma that some of the others have, but I think that could also be kind of a vulnerability at the same time too, so that, you know, that can wax or wane a little bit. But yeah, I think he's great.
It could play onto the how he's like his father in that sense.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, very good call. Yep. All right, so for Marty, I went with Nicholas Holt, Lee went with Thomas Decker, Andy went with Kevin McHale from Glee, not the basketball star, Mark went with Zac Efron, and Jer went with Jay Baruchel. So those are our major characters. I know we're going a little long here, so gentlemen, let's do a quick lightning round of three minor characters here, the first of which is Mr. Strickland. Andy, who did you pick for Mr. Strickland and why?
I picked for Mr. Strickland Michael Chiklis.
Cool.
For no other reason than he's another kind of intimidating bald guy who can play the role similarly to the original actor. I'm blanking on his name right now. Help me out, guys.
James Tolkien.
Thank you, James Tolkien.
Just a refresher, Mr. Strickland is the principal of the high school.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've skipped the introduction.
That's all right. Who is the exact same person and look, not changed in the slightest between 55 and 85.
He's also pretty much a rehearsal for James Tolkien's role in Top Gun 1 year later.
Exactly. You're writing checks your body can't cash, mister.
Yeah. So,
yep.
Michael Chiklis.
I dig it. It's perfect. It's perfectly bald.
Nice.
If it's not Alan Arkin, I don't
know. Ooh, that's a good call, too. I like Chiklis a lot. That's a good one. All right. So up next is Goldie Wilson. Mark, who did you pick for Goldie? Well, who was Goldie, and then who did you pick for Goldie?
Well, Goldie Wilson is the soda jerk in 1955, but he's the mayor in 1985. And my pick for Goldie is Bruno Mars.
Ooh, I like that a lot.
I actually considered him for my Marty.
Yeah?
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Has he done much acting? Or I know him as a singer well, but...
No, okay. No, he hasn't. But his proving grounds for me was his hosting of Saturday Night Live, and I thought it was great.
Oh, right on. I'll have to look that up. I didn't see that at all.
Yeah, I thought it was very good, very funny, and he really threw himself into it. And so I thought that that he could do a really good job of doing that kind of wide-eyed sort of dreaming... Or Goldie's like, Mayor, I like the sound of that.
And yeah, yeah, I can see that big time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then last but not least here, I'm going to say that about myself because I'm a jerk, is Jennifer Parker, which I am picking. Jennifer Parker is Marty's 1985 high school sweetheart and loves him for who he is, although she probably loves him just a little bit more when he gets that boss Toyota pickup with the light rack and the revised 1985 timeline. I mean, who wouldn't, right?
Damn!
I mean, you got to love him a little bit more there. So my choice for Jennifer Parker, this is a little bit of an also-ran, but I want to say that in as a complimentary way as possible. I nearly chose this actress for Lorraine, but it wasn't as good a fit as Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And so I put her down here because I just want her to be in a movie that I'm casting because I think she's awesome. And that is Aubrey Plaza. Plaza?
Nice.
Plaza?
Nice.
I just saw her in Safety Not Guaranteed and just totally fell in love with her. I just think she is so great and, like, you know, quirky in the best way and really interesting. And I think it has a really good energy. And I think, like, I also, this is the one character, believe it or not, that I thought about 2 and 3. That I thought about, like, going forward, having her involved more, and I would be really excited about that. So, yeah. So Aubrey Plaza is who I went with for that.
Nice. I'd be excited to see her playing a role where she's a little bit less sarcastic, a little bit more sincere.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Just sweet and good, but, you know, could have a little bite to it, but not in that cynical, sarcastic way. I think that's right on.
Yeah, the first 2-3 seasons of Parks and Rec, I just did not like her at all. And I've, as that character has expanded, I've grown to like her quite a bit on the show.
I think, she's hilarious on that show.
And I loved her in Scott Pilgrim.
Yep, that too. Totally.
Man, I need to see that movie.
You haven't seen that, Jer?
No.
Oh my God. Nope. Come over this weekend. We'll watch it. I have it on Blu-ray. It's so good.
It's so good.
Send it to Michigan when you're done.
All right. Deal.
Okay.
Deal. All right. So that's it for the first part. Now that we're at about the hour and a half mark, we're doing well. This is like Breakfast Club-esque in scale. I think deservedly so. Well played. This episode deserves this epicness. So thank you again, gentlemen, for your picks. So we are going to meet in a private conclave. We might throw some smoke out of the chimney to let us know who we picked. But we're going to talk about who won each of the various character roles. And then based on that, we are going to choose who gets to pick the next movie. And then in the part 2 of this episode, we are going to reveal what that movie is, who the big winner was, and who the winners were for each casting choice, and then also the next movie that we are going to be discussing. The next episode will be released on August 26th, where we will be discussing that, as well as the plot and filmmaking changes that we would make to Back to the Future. If you want to find out more information about Remakers, Mark, or about other podcasts or blogs on the Mathis Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. You can also find show notes there, so you can find that in the podcast file that you download or view, but you can also find that on mathishard.net, so just look for Remakers Mark there or any of the other shows. So, gentlemen, as always, this is a wonderful time. It's a highlight of my week/day/month, not necessarily in that order, and I really appreciate your insights and thoughts, and may the Force be with you.
And also with you.